Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends, to breakdowns of individual performers and angles, to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit VoicesOfWrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you brought your A-game. A-man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This is an A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you brought your A-game. A-man, no rain.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I am your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God, Oliva. How you doing, JD?
I'm all right, man. It's that time of year, you know, finals are for us this week. Wrestling season is up and running. The boy had a tournament this weekend again. Just, you know, busy. How about you?
I'm good, man. I'm in a festive mood. We finally got all of our Christmas decorations up. I can see them outside the yard of my neighbor across the street there. She got all hers up too. Well, she didn't. She had her son come in from out of town and do everything. But she's not like elderly. She's just a little older. So she had her adult son come and take care of everything. But it's been good. We had a good time tonight. Went to my cousin's house and watched the 49ers put a whooping on the Tennessee Titans, who are a terrible ass football team. So that was probably the best game for us to like get together at. So that way there's no stress, you know, we're not like dog cussing the television. So that was good.
Bears had another win. Fortunately lost to the Packers last week, but they play them again this week. So
fingers crossed. Yeah. And then in 2 weeks, the 49ers and the Bears play each other. So that should be fun. Or it could be a total nightmare. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to go. But both those teams are doing pretty good this year, which is pretty crazy because usually one team is good and the other team's like super bad. So both those teams are doing pretty good this year.
I forgot to turn on my hotspot. So if you lose me first thing, I'm turning my hotspot on. So yeah. They're both doing pretty good this year. I'm literally afraid to watch the Bears play because I haven't been following closely in a while. Because watching the Bears religiously and following sports talk radio, I found was making me miserable. So I kind of cut it off about a decade ago. And that's actually kind of how I fell into like listening to wrestling podcasts. So now that they're good again, I'm afraid to start watching. I'm afraid that if I start following like intensely, they're going to start losing and I'm insane. So I can't like fight against that because it makes sense in my crazy head. So I'm like scared to watch my favorite football team.
So in your opinion, who are the most irrational people on podcasts or even like sports talk radio? Is it wrestling fans or is it NFL fans?
Oh God. What's the difference? They're like the same people. It's
the same shit. Like,
yeah.
You know, just getting mad and doom and glooming over the smallest things and the smallest details. Going super crazy when someone jumps ship from one organization to the next. I don't know how many times in both pro wrestling and football, it happens at the same time where one player leaves one team to go to the next team. And all of a sudden that player was never any good. And when he goes to the next team, those fans hated him before he got there. I always go back to the Richard Sherman deal where Seattle, you know, let Richard Sherman go from free agency. And he was like our hated enemy forever. And then the 49ers signed him and we loved him. Now he's a beloved 49er. And it's similar in pro wrestling. Like, you know, all the, you know, WWE fans hated, you know, you pick a wrestler that jumped ship. Like he sucked. And then when he got over there, they loved him. And then vice versa for sure.
Cody Rhodes is the best example of that. They hated him when he was in AEW and on the Indies. And now he's QB1. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, dude, I grew up, I'm a huge White Sox fan. I grew up hating the Cleveland Indians and Albert Bell until he signed a massive deal with the White Sox. Then I became a humongous Albert Bell fan. Like, that's just how it goes. Like,
Albert Bell fucking ruled, by the way.
He was a complete asshole, but he was a damn good baseball player. Like, he's a horrendous human being. But man, could that guy hit the cover off of baseball? Like,
yeah,
it's like this is how it goes. It's like, dude, there's no difference between fantasy football fans and Dungeons and Dragons players. Same shit, but different, you know?
Yeah,
like it's the same type of personality. So I mean, like, I don't know, man. Sports talk radio made me, and I find this, I found the same pattern too with miserable wrestling fans. And I try to stay away from them now on YouTube. That's why I'm not as active on Twitter as I used to be. Because fandom just gets on my nerves, you know.
Yeah, I've been pretty active on Twitter. That entertains me. I've taken a step back from some of the Discord channels that I've been in just because I'm like, why are you guys discussing all of this? It's just like, and you're so irrationally emotional about topics that have no meaning whatsoever. It boggles my mind. And then, you know, if I were to go into an NFL Discord, I get the feeling it's the same. It's like just irrational people having unhealthy conversations.
Exactly. I have a hard time. I've always kind of felt this way. Like Andy and I were at the mall today after his tournament. We're walking around and we're at the sporting goods shop and they had the Big Ten section. They had all these different Big Ten schools. And I walked by, I'm like, oh, Indiana, I hate them. Wisconsin, I hate them. Michigan, I hate them. Michigan State, I hate them too. U of I, tolerate. Like, he's like, why do you hate everybody? I said, because I competed against these schools when I was in college and I'm still bitter about a lot of it. Like, you know, like I had this weird thing about like, if I can't, I don't want to get emotionally invested in something that I have no control over.
Yeah.
Like I find that to be crazy, which is why I'm an absolute lunatic when it comes to amateur wrestling. Cause I do have something of a control over that. Like I can like participate in that. But I can't get super worked up into sports. Even though we have a wrestling podcast, like, you know, I find that I laugh at people and I enjoy talking about the business end of things more so than the nuts and bolts of the actual match. Like fandom intrigues me, especially this week. A lot of crazy fandom.
Yeah, a lot of crazy fans. Before we do have a special guest. We're going to bring in Cousin Joe here in a minute. WWE expert Cousin Joe. But you mentioned Michigan. This hating Michigan is probably a good week for you, like as a Michigan hater with the Sharon Moore controversy going down.
Okay, I was vastly entertained by that whole thing. And we were talking about this at practice, me and some of their guys. Like if they were better, if he was a better football coach, they'd easily sweep this under the rug, right? Yeah. If they weren't bad, it'd be easy to cover this up. Ah, you know, boys will be boys. You know, it's humorous. I grew up a humongous Michigan fan. Like when I was a kid, I wanted to go to the University of Michigan for no doubt because of Rick and Scott Steiner. like that for no reason, no other reason. I went to a wrestling camp there when I was in high school, and the head coach there blew me off, and I not wanted nothing more than to wrestle for this guy. And so from that moment on, I'm like, I fucking hate the University of Michigan. And I got my chance to wrestle them. My sophomore year of college, I got to wrestle a kid from Michigan. And I beat his ass. And it was just like the best feeling in the world. And I wanted to come up, Matt, like, fuck Michigan. I fucking hate Michigan. Like, I hate them all. I'm not a Big Ten. I don't even like my college all that much. Like, I'm a hater. I hate everything.
All right, well, we'll go ahead and we'll bring in Cousin Joe, Fed Pilled Joe. How you doing, Joe, man? How's your weekend,
dude? The 49ers won. My entire weekend is made. My weekend, you guys talk about like bad sports talk fandom and bad fandom, my weekend is made or broken by the 49ers winning. So we're on a pretty good roll right now. I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, no, I feel you. Like, when the 49ers lose, I don't listen to NFL podcasts for like a whole week.
I won't even watch like NFL Network or ESPN the entire week until the Niners get a win again.
Yeah. I get the same way with some of my, you know, pro wrestling fandom as well. I was having, I don't know why I had a conversation with Jimmy Corderas. Don't hold it against me.
Why did you do that?
He engaged me, right? And he kept quote tweeting me, so he was looking for engagement. And I did the worst thing you could possibly do to a total fucking bald-headed. Okay, look, bald-headed. I can we smell our own. I can insult him, call him a bald-headed scumbag like Jimmy Corderas. I was polite. Like, that's the worst thing you can do. It's like, oh, god damn it, this guy's nice. Yeah. So
because he wants to fight with you. And wants to get all those WWE sycophants like, yeah, man, fuck this guy, you know, like, yeah,
right. So, and this was at the time when you know, Mike Santana lost his belt, and I said, fire everybody in TNA, and he was like, do you really want everybody in that entire company to lose their jobs? I said, no, you know, I was like, but some people should lose their jobs. I'm like, trust me, every time Brock Purdy throws an interception, I think he should be cut. Right. Or every time they make a bad trade or they make a bad draft pick, I think the head coach and the general manager should be fired. Yeah. Right. That's what it's, you know, that's just what I'm doing. Right. So don't take it personal. And that was the conversation that we had. And that's I always compare pro sports fandom to pro wrestling fandom, because everybody's kind of locked in on their favorite promotions and they're just super irrational about other promotions. And the bad stuff that their promotion does, they're willing to overlook it. But when the other promotion does it, it's like, oh, fucking open season on them. Right. So super fascinating. So Joe, I wanted to have you on. Let's go and get to the main topic of the show. John Cena, he wrestled Gunther in the main event of Saturday night's main event. It was a John Cena tribute show, essentially. Super melodramatic. The match, I thought, and I'm curious to get your thoughts, Joe, and I know JD, you saw some of it. I thought the match was pretty good. I thought it was a good match. You know, Gunther's an amazing wrestler, and John Cena, when he wants to, can really kick it up a notch. What'd you think of the match? And then most importantly, what did you think of the finish? Cause that's been that's been controversial among, the Fed heads. I'm not even talking AEW fans. Like, AEW fans are kind of like, they didn't like it either, but they're kind of like sitting back and like just watching the world burn down. They're kind of enjoying it. Fed heads are revolting against one Triple Paul. What are your thoughts, Joe?
I knew the finish the moment that they announced Gunther would be in the tournament, because like there's some things that WWE does where you just know exactly every step they're going to take. And Gunther's big matches, he taps people out to the sleeper hold. And then Gunther said he was going to make John Cena give up. And there are some times when WWE just flat out tells you what they're going to do, and then everybody acts surprised when they do it. I thought it was fine. I would have completely understood if they had Cena win. For the crowd moment, it would have gotten the big pop. I would have completely understood it. I'm a bit younger than you guys, but I have been watching wrestling since 1999, I believe, maybe even 1998. I have watched a lot of older wrestling from the 70s and 80s. I really like guys losing on their way out. Stone Cold did it for The Rock. Ric Flair did it for Shawn Michaels. John Cena did it. And let me tell you, for years, for decades, people hounded Cena for never putting people over. And then the one time he does it, Lord have mercy, the house burns down. I thought the match was good. Cena really, you know, hit all the hits. He was goofy. He was serious. Like the best thing he did was made sure everybody could see every single spot that he called in typical Cena fashion.
Yes.
Like he did not cover that up at all.
There were times where I thought he was giving the Gettysburg Address of how much he's talking. Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to catch if you're not looking for it. But before Cena hit the Avalanche FU, Michael Cole did call it the FU a couple of times. I thought that was a nice touch by him. If you stare at Gunther, he actually makes Gunther laugh in the corner. Which never had, like, that guy rarely breaks character. He said something to him that got him to chuckle. I thought Gunther was the perfect guy for the spot. Yeah. They had to assign extra security for Gunther walking out of the building because fans were rushing him and cussing him out.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
If Gunther opens the show on Monday, which he should,
yeah,
it'll be close to Roman Reigns after WrestleMania 34 when the fans booed him for 10 minutes straight and he just said, my yard now, and walked out when Roman should have turned heel. Gunther might get that kind of heat. And I hope it flows through 2026 with AJ Styles, who's coming near the end, said 2026 at some point is going to be his last year. Likely Chris Jericho, like, not overly excited about that, but, you know, that's probably coming, and likely Brock Lesnar. I think Gunther should retire all three of them.
Yeah. Joe, I agree with you. Look, I personally, like, I wanted John Cena to win because I just really enjoyed that Sting match so much.
Yeah.
That Revolution. But the difference between Sting and John Cena is, you know, the way that they presented Sting in AEW was Sting was Batman. Yeah. Sting never lost in AEW. And that was the perfect way for him to go out. John Cena lost all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Like the last 10 years or so, he probably lost more matches than he won. He just lost to Dominic Mysterio a month ago. He got squashed by Brock Lesnar 2 months ago. He lost to Cody Rhodes at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. Like, this is everybody saying, like, hey, this superhero died in the end. That was and we'll talk about Jeff Jarrett's tweet in a sec, but that's what everybody was comparing it to. And I was like, no, this guy loses all the time, and and he just was wanting to put Gunther over with Gunther's finish on the way out, much like how Gunther always wins. And I don't disagree with it. I just thought it would be kind of a cool moment to do that. They didn't do it, and I was not mad at all.
And to me, as a fan, it keeps Sting's moment special because, like, you don't have just another moment like that. Like, Sting gets to have that one unique moment of going out with the win, Austin did come back and he had the one versus Kevin Owens, entirely different to me. Sting has that one unique moment where most guys of his age and his tenure in the business don't get to have that. So I like that Cena and Sting's are kind of parallel to each other. Now, I will say that place would have flipping erupted if Cena would have beat him. They were ready to blow the top off of it. But it was really awesome seeing all the people in the crowd crying, like, immediately. Seeing Gunther go after the kid when the kid told him he stunk, and he immediately walked over and started chatting with him. Like, Gunther's the best. Like, there's a reason he's one of my favorite wrestlers going right now.
JD, what are your thoughts on this? Was this the right finish? Is this what JD would have done? And what did you think of it?
A week ago we were talking about it, and I said Cena's probably going to lose. Yeah. I had a couple, I don't know if there's issues. I think the Cena retirement tour, I think we can all admit that it was flubbed. I don't want to say fumbled. That's like an internet dwarf.
First 6 months, absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, I think for sure. I don't think Levesque's a great booker. I've been saying this for a long time. I think that WWE's in a phenomenal marketing position. I think Nick Khan is really good at his job. And I think Triple H loves to be praised publicly. So I think this is going to bother him a little bit, the fact that people are starting to call him out, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that Cena losing was the right move. I do. Because it's just what WWE does. Like, I know we have this great Sting moment, the Sting moment. Let's not forget, that wasn't supposed to be the Sting moment. Sting's last match was getting beat by Seth Rollins. That was how it was supposed to happen. So the fact that AEW exists gave us a chance to rewrite Sting's exit into the business, which was great. But I'm supposed to say it's bad because everything Tony Khan does is bad, according to Twitter. I don't love the guy whose phrase forever was never give up, giving up. I think as a character, I think strictly from a character moment, if I'm going to turn off my Dave Meltzer brain for a minute, I think giving up runs counter to what he was about. I think he could have gone to sleep.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't surrender. I think having John Cena give up is the wrong move. I think what's worse, though, was him acting like he didn't give a fuck afterwards. Like, I didn't see pain. Like, he looked like he was bothered for a second, then he was like okay with everything. And I don't
it seemed like he was happy it was over.
It didn't seem like he fucking cared. It seemed like he's ready to go, oh, thank God I can be done with this shit now. Like, it didn't seem like when Ric Flair lost to Shawn Michaels and he was in tears and it was just the worst thing that ever happened to him. Like, even though he knew it was time to go out, like, that's still probably one of the best tournaments ever. Like, it didn't have that vibe. Like, he didn't seem like, I don't know, man. It seemed like from a pure character perspective, it seemed to kind of go against what the character John Cena stood for all these years. The fact that he gave up. And I know that everyone's going to tell me I'm wrong. Shut up, you hate it, WWE. Well, I do. And the stuff, I guess, is the reason why. Because Triple H is a vapid piece of shit. So, yeah.
Yeah. So the way that I took the finish was, he's in the chokehold. He can't get out. And then he's smiling and he's like, I don't have to do this anymore. I don't have to fight this anymore. I'm done now. So he gave the big smile and said, you got me, kid, and tapped out. And anybody that's ever rolled around in jiu-jitsu, I never felt like a quitter when I tapped out. I was just like, you know, that's how I never felt that way. But I also, John Cena, just, that's not anything that he did. Joe, how many times did John Cena tap out? Just what, one time?
No, that would actually be his third or fourth time. Yeah, so actually fourth. So Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, and now Gunther.
Yeah, but I do agree with you, JD. Yeah. I think passing out would have been the way to go, by the way. But go ahead.
How many of these were John Cena, though, like in post 2005, right? Because there's or 2004. That's a different John Cena than
those were all pre John Cena winning the world title.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. Now, I will say, and somebody on Reddit brought up the point, because the whole, you know, him passing out was brought up, and they said, right, if he passes out, how long do you have him lay there in the ring selling the move passed out? Or do you just have him get right up? Like, then you have to have the kids see John Cena pass out, and how much worse is that than them seeing him tap out?
Everything they do is so fucking slow. You wake up 20 seconds later.
Yeah. He wakes up. No, dude, that's the, okay, look, let's do it. Let's talk about this. Like, oh God, I hate Reddit so much. Like, John Cena passes out. He goes out valiantly. He doesn't surrender. He doesn't quit. And then he fucking comes back to, and he pulls himself up rope by rope while everybody cheers him, because he's the old timer who's pulling himself back up like an unfucking forgiven with Clint Eastwood, you know, struggling for one last breath. And then you get the people from the back coming out there. And then it's like, he's disappointed. He's upset, but he sees how much he's beloved by the people and by the people backstage. And it would have been a much better moment.
Yeah, I disagree there. I think him tapping out is just fine.
Why? Yeah. Why is it good, Joe? Why is it good for the guy who taps out, who says never?
Because he was letting go of his career. It was his choice.
That's the way that I took it. I took it that way too. Like, I agree that passing out would have been a better, more dramatic moment, but I didn't see the problem with him tapping out. Although I did have fun with it on Twitter, calling him a quitter.
That's what the character is. Like, it goes, it spits in the fact of almost 20 years of character development, right? Like, why would that character not just give up? Especially if you know you're going to die. Why not just die? Why not die? Like, I think that's if you're going to be the lone gunslinger dies. He doesn't, like, think about these the old cowboy films. At no point does a guy say, hey, you know what? You've got me beat here. Shoot me in the face.
Yeah. Like, so the thing is, JD, he's not dying. He signed a 5-year deal. Career, he'll be back.
But the career is, if he's back, that's even worse. Like,
and I'm pretty sure Clint Eastwood literally did that in Gran Torino.
Gran Torino's not a cowboy movie, though.
It kind of is. Yeah. Like, Gran Torino's kind of
a
cowboy.
It's a modern cowboy movie.
It is, but it isn't.
It's like the same thing, but with like a really cool car and like And like him and his barber, like super racist.
Like super racist. Like, yeah. No, man, I totally did. This thing, it's not a cowboy movie. That's, and Gran Torino's a postmodern exhibitionist piece. Yeah. And I don't want, like, that's not what post, like, what wrestling
I'm
is
pretty sure
to.
John Wayne also did that in The Cowboys. The only
The Cowboys was in. His last movie. Yeah, he was also kind of a villain in The Cowboys.
It was not his last movie.
What was the one?
Many movies after that. It was the only the movie Cowboys? He died in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
trying to think of what his last movie might have been McClintock or something like that. Hell, I don't know.
I honestly don't think I have
my grandpa's John Wayne clock hanging up over here, but I don't know.
I'm not even sure a cowboy movie was his last movie. He made some more modern movies towards the end.
Yeah.
Regardless, like, it's still a terrible ending. It's still, and I'm not alone in this, by the way. When Triple H is doing a press conference, had people chanting AEW at him, which
dude,
I'm sure
they were
stung him to his core.
Yeah, the WWE fan. So I think the most important thing that came out of this, like, okay, John Cena's gone. John Cena said it on Joe Rogan's podcast. He goes, "I'm retiring on the 13th. Everybody's gonna forget about me by the Royal Rumble." So, and you know what? He's actually right about that. That's just how fast the business moves.
That's true.
After the show was over, they did the post show, and Triple H was at the post show desk, and fans were chanting, "I think you got to fuck you, Triple H." There's AEW now. It's probably like 37 AEW fans doing this, but God bless them, right? God bless all of them for disrupting this post show presser. You got AEW chants. And if it were AEW fans, some of them said, "Bring back Vince." There's some Vince McMahon chants going on, which sex trafficking guy. I don't think we want to bring him back, but that was kind of their thing. Although Vince did make a cameo on the show via a pre-recorded tape from years ago talking about John Cena, which ultimately made Cena cry in the theatrics after the match was over. But you know, could this be an undoing, not the undoing, because I think WWE is going to be just fine. But do you think that, like, this is a strong enough thing to get a lot of WWE fans up in arms for more than just that night?
No, we're
back to where we were in like 2015. Yeah. We're like, a section of the crowd is unhappy, but they have nowhere else to go because AEW is not good right now. So, I mean, like, what are they going to do? They're going to pay the bitch and they're going to say there's a vocal minority. Like, it's just going to be the same way it used to be. Like, they just,
it won't even show up in the shows. Gunther will get booed, but it won't be like when Daniel Bryan was getting pushed aside for Roman Reigns and the crowds literally took over the shows. It won't be like when they booked the stupid ass Hell in a Cell with Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt that ended in a DQ. And the entire arena started chanting AEW 2 months before it debuted on TV. That's not going to happen.
No, here's what could happen, though, is because the shows are trending down. Like, ticket sales are trending down. Not hugely, but there has been the trend over the last year. So I imagine that they could trend downward a little bit more, especially because Cena has been a big draw. And now you lose them, and you're coming back with Cody and Roman again for the third time. Typically, that. Something has done well before, it typically doesn't draw as good coming back. Stone Cold Rock is probably an anomaly.
The exception.
Yeah.
The exception to the rule.
It is the exception to the rule, but it's also when things started trending down in WWE. Like, that was, that's really kind of the end.
Well, and that wasn't because they did the third match. That was because they decided to turn Austin heel at his hottest. You know,
the third match was
19. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's when it started going down after 17.
Yeah, it did.
But like the end, like, it really starts to trend downward. Yeah, after that one, and that's so weird because that's not even really booked as it was Austin's retirement match. They didn't book it like that. They didn't promote it like that. Nobody knew it was a retirement match, but Austin and Vince. So that's kind of an anomaly in and of itself.
I think the office at the time fully believed that they would have Austin back in a year or two.
Oh, I think
just
so.
Thought,
yeah.
Yeah, and just thought, hey, he just needs some time to heal up and rest. And I think Cena will probably be back on TV, but I do fully believe he won't wrestle again because he is invested so much in acting. So when he says that he won't wrestle again, he does enjoy acting a ton. And his interviews with Mark Rinaldi, Chris Van Vliet, the guy is in pain. Like, he like physically his body is breaking down, and that's the reason he decided to do this. He did say he wanted to do 220 dates. I don't think his body would have held up for it.
Well, I also don't think he understood the modern schedule. They don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that mm-hmm. they don't have all the house shows anymore. I think the most a person would wrestle in WWE this year is around 75 matches without looking it up. And Jon Moxley, before he left WWE, had a year where he wrestled 200, and that was even trending down in WWE at that time. So, yeah, I don't think Cena's body would have held up. I do truly believe that he won't wrestle again, but he's going to be involved a lot. He had a lot of fun going to Bayley's camp, where they had, I think, about 40 women, all mostly indie talent, some NXT people, some TNA people, and doing a coaching there. He's had a lot of fun doing the coaching in NXT. That's the kind of stuff that I think we'll see Cena.
Yeah.
Hey, those Saudi checks.
Like, yeah. So that I think that could be the one exception is that the Crown Prince gives him a call for Saudi Mania.
I could see 5 years. I think I could see him coming back in about 5 years' time. I think he does. I think
at 53 the moment, then.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not the way it used to be. You know, guys are going deeper than they ever have.
Yeah.
I think a couple years off might be what he needs. And like you said, money might be really good in about 5 years' time. I truly believe he thinks this is the last match he's ever going to wrestle. We'll see what happens at that time.
To be very involved in DC as well. Him and James Gunn have become very tight. And, you know, a lot of that could change depending on what happens with Warner and kind of what they do with James Gunn after that. But I do think even if James Gunn loses Warner, him and John Cena have become very tight. And I think John Cena, like Batista, would be one of those guys who always has jobs in Hollywood because of the connections he's made in Hollywood.
Well, yeah, James Gunn is a guy who hires his friends constantly.
Yeah.
Like it just, and most directors are, they like working with people they trust. Yeah. Wrong with that.
Scorsese is still booking Robert De Niro. Like after all these years.
And DiCaprio.
Yeah. Like has Tim Burton ever made a movie without Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter? Like, yeah, that's just kind of how it works.
Batman, but
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. But post Edward Scissorhands or post,
not many.
Not many.
You're right. Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
He doesn't Johnny. I think Johnny Depp is just a better looking version of Tim Burton. So I think he sees, I've always thought he kind of sees a lot of himself in Johnny Depp. So he likes casting him for that reason. I don't know, man. I think that he truly believes he's retired, but it's pro wrestling. I would be surprised if he never comes back. You know,
I mean, it did take Stone Cold, 20 years?
20 years.
20 years to come back. And Stone Cold's probably coming back again. Like he's working out again. So, and they're doing WrestleMania about 10 miles from his home. So.
Where are they doing WrestleMania that's 10 miles from his home? He lives in Sparks, Nevada.
Maybe not 10 miles, but right down the road. They're doing it in Las Vegas again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But I was about to say, it's like a 7-hour drive.
Yeah. Oh, is it that far?
Yeah.
Well, he said that he wouldn't leave Nevada again. Yeah. And then they announced WrestleMania in Nevada again. And he said, well, fuck. So.
Yeah. Well, God damn, son.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that match was good. Let's go ahead and run down some of the other matches. Mm-hmm. The opening match, and Joe, I want to.
That was the only one I was really angry about.
What would you say, Joe?
That was the only one I was angry about.
Yeah.
What a shitball finish that was.
So Obafemi versus Cody Rhodes. I thought they were having a pretty good match. I thought Obafemi is super over. Mm-hmm. I feel like him being on another episode of NXT is just a goddamn waste.
Yeah.
Legitimately. Like he should Mike Gilbert booking, right? If that's what we're doing. I would have just shocked the world and had Obafemi go over clean, right? Yeah. It could have been a shock pin, but I would have had Obafemi beat Cody Rhodes. Cody would have been fine coming out of it. Maybe he's like, he took the kid lightly, like kind of one of those deals.
Yeah.
And then it could have, you know, paid off, you know, down the road.
He's
fantastic, but the finish was total coward ass booking. Yeah. You could tell Triple H didn't want to book the match. It was very likely John Cena's idea, and they placated Cena. And so they're like, okay, we're going to do this, but we're not going to give you a finish. And that's kind of what it seemed. Drew McIntyre comes in and gets the disqualification and big schmoz. And then that's all it was.
So you saying like they could have booked it as like Cody taking the kid lightly. You're asking a lot of wrestling fans to have like that deep of thought about anything. Right. I hated the finish. Like I knew Drew was going to get involved. I thought maybe at least Drew got involved in a way that would lead to Oba winning. You have a chance to make it not as terrible because they did have Oba put Drew on his ass. You could have just set up Oba versus Drew at WrestleMania. And I would have Oba beat Cody at Backlash right after. Like I think Oba, I've said for about 2 months now that if you wanted to put Oba in the main event of WrestleMania this year, this coming year, fans would buy into him. He's that good. He's great on the mic. He is a great athlete. He's picked it up like not very many have as fast as he has, and he's still getting better.
Yeah. Yeah, I really dug it, and I think Obafemi is probably the next guy for the WWE.
I think they've got set up where they've got their next Batista and John Cena in different ways, but like between Bron Breakker and Obafemi, both of these guys are, I think, 26 and 29, 28, respectively. They've got the future of their company set up.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've gotten to watch Obafemi. I was insanely impressed. Insanely impressed. Yeah. That dude's got it. Like they talked about making stars. That dude's absolutely got it. He should absolutely win the Royal Rumble and then do whatever post Royal Rumble. I think you could have made him tonight, but at the same time, like tonight was about John Cena or that night, I should say was about John Cena. So I think it just, and that's just not what they do. WWE doesn't throw a guy in and make them out of nowhere. Yeah. It's never been them.
The closest thing they've ever just thrown a guy that I can remember and just making him in one night was Kevin Owens when he just showed up and beat John Cena clean.
Yeah.
But everybody likes to bring that up, but Cena came back and won twice clean after that, because that's the Cena way.
And it wasn't like they say he made Kevin Owens. It wasn't like Kevin Owens was on top of that company. He was a upper mid carder. Like he was made as an upper mid card guy, and he held like the B world title for a long time. You know, so it wasn't like they went out and made him the guy. It was still Roman was the guy in that era.
Yeah, but from that point,
they made him. Yeah,
if you would have put Kevin Owens in any main event, fans would have bought it.
But we're talking about making the next dude. Like, and I do think that guy could be the dude. I think people have been talking about Bron Breakker for years now, and I watch that guy, and I'm like, I get it. I see it. But I don't think he holds a candle to what Obafemi could be.
I think Oba has a higher ceiling.
Yeah.
Much higher. By far. So this is one of the few times where I can say I seen a guy early and could tell he had it. One of his first promos on NXT, the fans started doing the who? And it was the first time they had done it. And he changed his cadence mid promo to match what the fans were doing. And like to a lot of people, that's not a big deal. But to a guy who doesn't come from an entertainment background, he was a shot putter at Alabama. So it's not like he was a big TikTok star, a big Instagram star, came from an acting background or anything like that. He picked up on what the fans were doing and changed the way he was delivering a promo early. And then the physical stuff matched that part of it. Like it was very clear early on that that guy was going to be a future star.
Yeah. He was able to change his cadence while doing a fake Nigerian accent, which totally fucking,
that's like, a real Nigerian accent.
I thought that was a legit accent. It is. So kudos to him.
Legit accent.
No, it's part of like, no, so he has it a little bit, but it's more of a put on. He's like,
yeah, well, yeah, it's more deeper than what it is naturally. But like, he did grow up in Nigeria. He did say in an interview, he can turn it on and off as needed. There are some interviews he will do more of an American accent when people need to understand him more clearly.
Well, it just reminds me of like you're getting into like a TV show, right? And you're like two or three seasons deep in the main character. Like you see them like do like an interview outside of the TV show promoting the show, and they're fucking Australian. You're like, what the hell, man? I thought you were a Navy SEAL, you motherfucker.
Yeah, it's not like
Australian
a
in real life.
Not like a situation of like Kofi where he was fake Jamaican and not even close to a good Jamaican accent. Yeah. Like Obafemi grew up in Nigeria and didn't move to America until I think he was like 14 or 15. So like, dude,
yeah,
my wife's from Northern Wisconsin. Whenever she goes home to Northern Wisconsin, all of a sudden that accent comes, like, it's like so a reflex. Where it just,
I believe,
back on. People are like,
I believe the kids call it code switching. Is what they do is like, okay. When they, yeah, it just,
I think code switching is like it's a conscious thing. Like, yeah. I think with some people, like they go home and they're like,
yeah, just not realize it.
They just, yeah, they just pick up back, or like they hear the voice, they hear the accent, and like, yeah, they immediately fall back into it. I don't know. I think code switching is more of a conscientious, I could be wrong on this, but so, I'm wrong, but correct me.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a conscientious decision.
Yeah. Oba said he can turn it on and off as needed. So like when he'll go to a local news channel to do the weather to promote an NXT show, he'll speak in a more American accent. But when he does all of his actual wrestling stuff, the Nigerian accent is what comes easier to him.
Yeah. Well, we all agree that he is the next big star.
Money.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, next match was Sol Ruka versus Bayley. I think Sol Ruka is going to be the next women's star for that company. She's fantastic. I said it, yeah, when she came to TNA, and she did a couple matches there. And I was like, mm-hmm, like, who is this person? Why is she so great? She's yeah, barely, she's barely scratched the surface of what she's capable of. I got a little heat last night on Twitter because it said she was a white surfer girl. Turns out she's mixed.
Yep.
So people gave me some shit for that, but in my defense, white skin, blonde hair,
yeah,
I think she might even have blue eyes. So yeah, I just thought, you know, hey, look, one of us, man. Come yeah on now. I was celebrating. And it turns out I celebrated too quickly on that one. So, yeah. But the heat called me out on that, educated yeah, me yeah about her background. So
she is fantastic.
She's great.
Yeah. I know I seen somebody get onto her for stealing all of Will Ospreay's moves. And it's like, you know what? That's a good thing, because Will Ospreay is awesome. And if she can yeah do it, she'll be awesome as well. Like, yeah, you got to have some originality. That will come as she gets more into this. She's only been wrestling for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So, like, why would she not?
Yeah. Will Ospreay borrowed quite a bit of his stuff.
Right.
Too. So, I mean, it's not yeah like
how many people in wrestling are entirely original? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's 2025. This has been a thing for 100 years now. Like,
the only thing I worry about with Sol Ruka, she's already one of those NXT girls who's blown their ACL out. Right. And the fact that she was able to come back athletic, pretty damn impressive. I do yeah wonder physically, because she's insanely athletic. I do wonder physically how much her body can just handle the grind, mainly just because she has yeah been hurt before. And it's
so
it's the real trick to me is, can she adjust when she can't move like that yeah anymore? I don't know. It's interesting.
She'll have to tone down the athleticism at some point. The grind is not nearly as much. She'll probably only wrestle 30 matches a year now. Like, that's what WWE is. And a lot of them will probably be 5 or 10 minutes long. And she'll just have to pull out the big athletic stuff for the big shows.
It's not even the grind. It's like, you know, when you blow your knee, there's just things you can't do anymore. Like Dakota Kai being great, or not Dakota Kai. Who's the other one? The one who's Mike, who's the girl with AEW?
Nixon Newell.
Yeah, Nixon Newell, Tegan Knox.
I blanked completely a second there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, she's blown both her ACLs and she's just a shell of herself. So
but
that's the only concern I have is, like, you know, can, you know, because when you yeah when you get a major injury, it's hard to come back
from. Yeah. JD, that girl has no knees and yeah does not want to put anybody over in AEW.
Oh, none. I couldn't die 100%.
So they're not having her back.
She's worthless. I just wonder about, like, yeah, you know, because, but like I'm saying, like, when you have major, a few major knee injuries in a row, mm-hmm, it like changes you as a person when your style is so athletic to begin with. So that's the, my, yeah, I'm not saying she ain't great because she's really talented. I just yeah wonder, you know, I think it's a yeah legit question.
I think she will evolve as she starts to wrestle more people who are better than her. Like, yeah, the more she wrestles the Becky Lynch's, the Bayley's, the Charlotte Flair's, you know, Io Sky when she gets in the ring with her, like Asuka, I'm sure, you know, Asuka really gets a lot of people better fast when they start to work with her.
Yeah.
You know, she'll evolve and get better. Another thing on Nixon, like, you are right. She is a shell of herself. That first knee injury was not just an ACL. That was everything in the knee. Mm-hmm. One of the most devastating knee injuries I've ever seen in wrestling. So,
yeah, it's one of the things you have to cope with when you sign with NXT, and is that you're going to donate an ACL or two.
Yeah. And it, at least with,
MCL,
at least with Saul,
tendon,
yeah, at least with Saul, she's willing to wear the knee brace, to it, not 100% effective, but it does help. it does help protect you from further injury.
Right. So to the match, though, I didn't think the match was all that great. I mean, it was fine. So
it was short, and they got Sol stuff in.
I do like her. I do like her finisher, the Sol Snatcher. That probably should have been the finish, but she got it with a flash pin. All right, next match was AJ Styles and Dragon Lee, the WWE Tag Team Champions, defending against Javon Evans and TNA Wrestling X Division Champion Leon Slater, who was brought in for one reason and one reason only, to lose. they needed a guy to lose, so they brought in the TNA guy. No, actually, I think that they do really think highly of Leon. He's probably going to be signing there when his contract's up at the end of this year. And John Cena did want some young talent, and it was a good 6-minute match. For whatever you can get out of 6 minutes, it was a real sprint.
Yeah.
But AJ got the victory over he pinned Leon Slater. Mm-hmm. They did have a thing where AJ did a botch. I think that was a worked botch. Yeah. I don't really think that was legit. But
so one of the guys on Twitter, and I think it was one of the Fightful guys, maybe Joel. I could be wrong. Whoever tweeted it out will know. But he said, remember when AJ Styles slipped on the ropes on the indies and made a whole story out of it?
Yeah.
And that when it happened, they made sure the camera was behind Dragon Lee so you couldn't actually see his footing.
Yeah.
I think that was intentional. I think it's probably going to play into his retirement storyline that'll be coming up.
Yeah.
Of him just running out.
Him saying that I'm not that good anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah. JD, are you pulling up a thing? Chris Statlander did a knee twice.
Yeah.
Chris Statlander doesn't jump around doing gymnastics stuff. Chris Statlander is a base wrestler. Like she's strong and she picks people up a lot. So it's a completely different thing. But yeah, she did. And she doesn't move very fast.
A really good comparison.
Quick.
Yeah, a really good comparison for Saul will be Seth Rollins, who was a very athletic wrestler and blew his knee apart. And he can still do some athletic stuff, but you can tell he doesn't move around. And, part of that is getting closer to 40. But you can tell after post-knee surgery that he wasn't the same wrestler and had to change his style quite a bit.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Yeah. So I need to temper some of the expectations of TNA fans. I feel like this is my job as the only adult in the TNA world. Anytime you're setting up expectations, you're creating future resentments. So when AJ Styles doesn't show up to TNA to challenge Leon Slater for the X Division Championship, don't say I told you. Don't say I didn't tell you so.
Yeah.
That's not happening. That's not why they got AJ Styles to get the pin over him so he can now go challenge for the title on TNA. Everybody get that out of your heads. If he does challenge for it, it's going to be on WWE television. And the reason why I think it'd be on WWE television is because I get the feeling that they really, really like Leon.
Yeah.
And they want to bring him in. So they want to put him on television as much as possible. And, you saw what happens when they bring in a TNA guy over and over again, what they do with the next segment, which was complete dog shit. The Miz shows up and he's complaining about not being on the show. R-Truth comes out. R-Truth left this company and came back and was Ron the Truth Killings again and was serious. And then all of a sudden he flipped that back around and he's worse than he was before. I had not seen him in a long time. And the character of the crazy R-Truth character who is kind of stupid and goofy, the acting has gotten worse. And you can tell he's just not really feeling it anymore. Before you could tell he embraced the character. Now you can tell he's just doing it because this is what people want. He's like, well, shit, I'm getting paid. I might as well do it. That's what I felt last night watching, and I had not seen him in a while. And he shows up and said, they did a whole, JD, you don't know about this, but they did a whole thing where they put the balls in the thing where they spin the thing to pull the names out. Kind of like the fake NBA draft lottery. Okay. That's a total work. Everybody knows that's a sham. So this is also a sham. And the Miz was in there messing with some of them, and Joe Hendry, his name was in there, but Miz, you know, took his name out. So anyway, R-Truth comes out to call him out on that and says, "Here, you messed with who was it? Aldis's balls? Is that what he said?
Yeah, Joe? Aldis's yeah. balls.
So
yeah.
you messed with Aldis's balls, or you betrayed his balls, whatever. And there was a name in there of a guy who should have got an opportunity to wrestle John Cena." And then he opens the thing, and the name is Joe Hendry, and Joe Hendry comes out there and lays out the Miz.
Yeah.
For anybody that thought that Joe Hendry was going to come into the WWE and be anything other than a geek, you now know what they see him as, is a meme wrestler, comedy geek, and that's what he's going to be when he comes on the main roster. I think that TNA dodged a bullet by losing him, to be quite honest, because his star had started to decline. Mm-hmm. Now, once he lost to Trick Williams, his star just kind of greatly declined, and then he got beat, and now this is just what he is. Joe, please tell me you hated this segment. If you don't, I'm going to kick you
off. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of it, and I'm pretty sure it only happened for two reasons. One, I think John Cena wanted Truth, Miz, and Hendry on the show.
Yes.
And two, probably the more important reason it happened is they were still required to do a certain amount of commercials, and they didn't want to do commercials during matches, so they had to have a short segment between the finish of the tag match and the John Cena match where they could do commercial, short segment, and then commercial John Cena match.
Dude, the commercials on that show last night were fucking brutal, man.
Yeah.
I forgot how bad it was on Peacock. I have Peacock for 1 month. I went ahead and resubscribed because mm-hmm. I got a military discount, and I'm going to cancel that sub as soon as the NFL playoffs are over. I'm done after that. JD, the video that I sent you did not have that Miz segment, did it?
Oh, it was there.
Oh, it was there? I watched it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what Joe Hendry is going to be for them, right?
Yeah.
Geek. No kidding. Like,
he'll be a geek, but he'll make a lot of money doing it, and he'll be happy doing it.
Hey, you know what?
Because like,
that's a good role for him.
Yeah, he's very limited in the ring.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
Joe Henry's not a good wrestler, nor has he ever pretended to be one. He got over as a meme wrestler, and TNA smartly wrote it out, and he was able to ride it out to a WWE contract. He's going to be a sub mid card geek. He's going to be the dude. That was a passing of the torch moment.
Yeah.
Like, that's what that was.
Yeah.
Like,
R-Truth got a 20-year career out of that role.
Yep. More like 15, because he bounced around with TNA and stuff. About 20. Yeah, he's back 20.
Yeah, he came back to WWE a long time ago.
Right. It was like 2006 is when he returned.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. Like, what's sad is, like, it seemed like they were going to do something with him last summer, right? Then the fans all got behind him, and they seemed interested. He's like, "I'm Ron Killings," and then they immediately dropped it. So, I mean, like, in the ultimate work move, he got himself another contract.
Yeah.
Right. When they didn't have any use for him, and they've proven they don't have any use for him, and they made him call out his new successor. So, but good for him. He's getting paid. Joe Hendry is going to be doing, that's what he's for. He sings and he's goofy and he's perfect. We talked about this back in Brace for Impact stuff. Like, this is exactly the role that Joe Hendry should be in. He never fit in Ring of Honor and stuff like that. I hate it, but you know, that stuff's not for me. So, whatever.
Yeah. Joe, thank you for being here. That's where we're gonna say goodbye for now. We appreciate you, Joe. Thanks. What's your Twitter handle so everybody can follow you?
Yeah, don't follow me on Twitter. I offer no opinions of value on there, so don't even worry about it.
Okay, we will not promote Joe's Twitter then. That's fine. JD and I are gonna address all the comments now, and then we're gonna talk about Paramount's hostile takeover of Netflix. Dude, he just fucking hung up. Like, he just
fuck you guys. I'm out of here.
Yeah. But it's always fun to have Cousin Joe on. He watches every single WWE show he watches. So, like, he's when we're talking WWE, we need to have him here because neither of us know what we're talking about.
Oh, I agree 100%. I can say when something is bad, and that John Cena finish was bad. And
yeah,
when the crowd tells you it's bad, it was bad. Like, it just
When WWE fans they were notorious for years for revolting against that company, and then it kind of just stopped, and it stopped whenever AEW was created, because a lot of those people that were revolting against WWE just started watching AEW. Now they're AEW fans, right? So a lot of AEW fans are New Japan fans, Ring of Honor fans, old TNA fans, and just disaffected WWE fans who felt like they got burned for years by that company. And WWE then somehow just gets bigger. they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then they create all these new fans, and they have like programmed these people into loving every fucking thing that they do, and to where that the fans don't revolt against them. Last night was the first time, I think, in years where you actually had like a full-blown revolt against Triple H specifically. Since Triple H has taken over, he has been the darling of that company, and they came out against him hard last night. I hadn't seen anything like it in forever.
Oh, he's an unlikable turd. But I mean, I don't know if it's the first time. It seems like it's been building all year. Like, I feel like people have been bitching since WrestleMania, right? Since, and they were blaming, remember they were blaming The Rock at first. The Rock is ruining WWE. It's all The Rock's fault. He keeps ruining Triple H's, Triple Paul's stories. Like, it's The Rock. And then, like, it kept going. And then I think over the summer was the first time I started seeing online and in Reddit. And it's like, people like, you know, Triple H kind of sucks. And now it's just become like a thing where it's not everybody, but it's a lot of their fan base are now starting to say this. And I don't think it's going to be as bad as it was in the mid-2010s where they're playing with the beach balls and Raw and stuff like that. I don't think it'll be that bad. But yeah. I do think you're going to have some disenfranchised fans because I do see a lot of people saying, I'm going to go check out AEW. It's not a lot. It's very anecdotal. But and the problem is that AEW just can't landed. They just can't make the stuff work. And this is from a fat guy who's very disenfranchised with AEW too right now. So I don't know, man. It's pro wrestling in itself, I think, is on a downturn. And I don't know how. I don't think WWE can keep all this. This will be four straight years of positive momentum. I don't think they can keep it going in this next one. I don't think they can.
Man, I think that at least at the box office, as far as ticket sales go, I think losing Cena is going to be huge for them. I think that's going to hurt them. I think it's going to hurt them. I think the ticket prices are already hurting them. And I think losing Cena is actually going to hurt them even more. They're going to, and them doing an AJ Styles retirement tour is not going to be the same as John Cena. Doing a Chris Jericho one is not going to hit the same. Brock Lesnar's not going to hit the same because Brock Lesnar doesn't have like the love affair with the fans. They like seeing him still. Like he's just like this big beast. He's, you know, they like see him come out, but he never had the connection with the fans where they loved him and he loved them back. It was just like, you got that with John Cena.
Is Chris Jericho going to want to come in and play the same song that John Cena just did? That seems very not Chris Jericho.
I don't think it's going to happen, but I keep bringing the TNA thing up because I was like, the TNA thing kind of is his speed, I think. Like a company on the upswing, right? Regardless of what I say about their creative being shite, you know, they, like you said, look, Delirious and Time and Dreamer are not good bookers, but TNA has done a good job of marketing themselves and getting out there, getting the ground game going for their live event business. And they were able to parlay that into a television deal, of course, with the partnership of WWE. So it's masking bad creative. And so I think that, you know, Chris Jericho could see like this company on the upswing come in and take credit for a lot of shit. Again, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think TNA has that kind of money for all accounts. Like, I don't think they're getting a ton of money out of this AMC deal. So we shall see. But I think WWE is in for, they're making so much fucking money. It's not going to hurt them, but I think that, you know, business will be down this year as far as at the box office, at least.
Do you think they would bring the WWE, bring Chris Jericho in and Triple H will just book him like shit just because he's petty?
Yeah. I could see that for sure.
I could see that too. And almost like doing a parody of the John Cena clothes. Like I could see that.
Yeah. Cause you know, like, you know what? You want to know why I know that Vince McMahon never really liked Kurt Angle?
Tell me.
Because look at how he went out. He lost to Baron Corbin on the way out, and they made him look like a goof. Like I people that you actually genuinely like and respect, you don't do that to. And he did not like or respect Kurt Angle, and that's how Kurt Angle went out. I could see Triple H doing that to Chris Jericho for sure.
I know. Jericho feels like he's got something to prove, and I think he feels like he has one more fuck you in his holster because his whole career is kind of built on that. If you read his books, he really feels like he's an underdog and that he's always had something to prove, which kind of does at this point because like he kind of was AEW's crown jewel for a little bit and then lost a lot of stock over the years. I think their fan base just got really tired of him. The WWE fan base that they've cultivated doesn't really know who he is. just like they really didn't know Punk initially, right? Like the Chicago people went ape shit for Punk. It's a perfect place to have him come back. And that kind of, and then they re-educated now Punk's, you know, beloved to this new audience because it's CM Punk. Does Chris Jericho have that anymore? I don't know that he does. Like he's really good at getting over. He's really, really good at getting over. But
yeah, everybody's saying he's going to get this really big pop at the Royal Rumble, but Royal Rumble's in Saudi, so I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, yeah. It's like, it's never a good idea to bet against Chris Jericho. But a 55-year-old, that's like Joe's like, Cena will be 53. I'm like, dude, Jericho's 55, and he's signing with WWE again, probably. Like, still trying to prove like he can go. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me get to some comments, and then we're going to get to our last topic. All right. EPW Show says, like, was it WWE fans chanting AEW, or are they going to support AEW? I think that was like a small smattering of AEW fans that are double agents. They're these hardcore AEW fans that still go to WWE shows when they're in town.
Typically, AEW fans are pro wrestling fans.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been the case forever. Like, AEW does not done a great job creating AEW only fans. And to be quite AEW only fans,
I think you have a great idea. I think you have a great Harley Cameron. Like, I don't know. Stop. Stop. Go ahead.
What was I going to say? But AEW's business model is based on the idea that there are other wrestling companies out there, right? That they're not alone, that they're part of the greater infrastructure. So, I mean, like, it makes sense that AEW fans would be fans of the greater business, where WWE is always, always insulated its fans.
Yeah.
Like, going back to Vince, like, from day one. So, I don't know.
Heat is on says, and Heat is on follows WWE really closely, says, the first half of WWE of the year is all overseas. I think 2026 will be big for the Fed. I mean, look, they're going to get more money than they've ever gotten because their TV rights escalate. And they always do really well overseas, but I am curious about the US market, how that works out. So we'll see. Like I said, it's going to be a big year regardless because it's WWE. I think that the US market is going to be down a little bit.
Why? Okay. Let's look back in time. Cause you can always, you learn about where the future is going by examining the past. When WWE was really struggling in the U.S. in the houses in 91 and 90,
you're right, awesome.
After they started running Europe a lot.
Yep.
And who was the who were the two most popular guys that the company had in Europe, Mike?
Oh gosh, Bret Hart
and Davey Boy Smith.
Yeah,
like so, those were their guys. One of those guys was a crack addict. One of those guys was super reliable and got really over. And like that's why they went with Bret Hart, because they were touring, they were touring the UK and Germany and all that so much, and Bret was really, really over there. And that's another reason. And that's like we talked about, is Vince struggled with that because Bret wasn't what Vince saw as his guy, but he was the one that was getting all that was the super most over in the place they were drawing the most money because they were struggling. This isn't like, I know like they like to like whitewash the history of WWE. They were really struggling in the US houses from about 91 to about 96, right? And the top draw overseas. And every time they went overseas, they made money. So it was like their break glass in case of emergency. Bret was the guy and they couldn't deny it. So, I mean, I'm not going to say they're not going to make money overseas because they're clearly gonna, but when they come home, I don't think I think the US fan base, it will always set the tone for what the rest of the company is, regardless of how well things sell overseas. The US audience oftentimes determines where the company is going.
Yeah. Little Silver Jackson says 10% Jericho goes to TNA. I think that's a good percentage.
That's a bold statement, I think, even there.
Yeah. All right. When someone posted AEW ratings trend, it was noticeable that there was a non-insignificant dip after Sting retired. I think this could hurt the ratings as well. So Sting was not he was not a ratings mover for that show because he was never a central character on the show. He was an ancillary character.
He was also never advertised.
Yeah. Yeah, so the show was built around, you know, during that time, it was like Hangman and the Young Bucks and all those people. So ratings up or down, I don't think that Sting played a part in that, but he absolutely fucking sold 20,000 tickets in Greensboro for sure. Mm-hmm. Let's see. All right, hold on. Lil Silver, man, I love you. TNA has money. They paid a lot for the Good Brothers.
God, not Chris Jericho Lil Silver,
money. I like this guy. I want to be nice here. There is a humongous fucking difference between the $500,000 they paid the Good Brothers and the $5 million that it would take to get Chris Jericho to come to your company. Big difference. Chris Jericho is a next level star.
Generational star. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Triple H would love to book Jericho retirement tour. It's all about the game. Yeah, I'm sure.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm sure he would love that. And I'm shocked that Jericho feels so desperate he has to.
Yeah, on the TNA AMC deal, apparently it's an ad split deal with AMC paying one third of the production costs. That has not been reported, and I don't think that's anywhere, but it sounds correct. So whenever I heard about it in September, though, JD, you got the text, right, JD? I sent it. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I did send it right after the show last week, a revenue share. So a revenue share, meaning ad split, basically. So, I mean, that could be true, but I don't know what that was before the deal was announced, like months before. So I don't know what it actually is. So
that's a good deal. That's a good deal for TNA right now. A rev share to get back into like major cable. You take that deal's offered to you.
Yeah. Like a prove it deal for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's smart. Jericho's great at reinventing himself. This is from Gerard and adapting for the most part. Yeah, no, he is. That's what he really is good at.
It is, but at the same time, like, you got to be allowed to, too. He's going into a much, that was a big sneeze. I don't know who it was from. He's going into a much more restrictive environment than he's used to or has been a part of in a long time.
Yeah. And so one of the reasons why he went to New Japan and then ultimately AEW is because he was like, I don't want to go back and do the list. You know, like I don't want to go back and play the hits. Mm-hmm. I want to do new stuff, and that's why I'm like just really curious about what he's going to be doing. Let's see. Vince had Dango beat Y2J. He sure as hell did. Fandango beat Y2J at WrestleMania. Let's see. The news today: Bobby Lashley is cashing in on his AEW Lloyds of London contract. Word is Bobby will be out for a while. Yeah, he is definitely hurt. That broke just before we went on the air. Okay. All right. Let's see. AEW had that deal on TNT when it first started, right? Yeah, it was the same deal. So, but sure, I think so. Here, the AEW deal with TNT was a revenue split, and I think TNT also kicked in some money for production costs. But everybody believes that Warner Brothers owns a piece of AEW, so they had a bigger stake in their success. So I don't think that's the deal here with TNA. Although the Dolan family buying TNA would probably be a good thing for TNA. All right, JD, what's going on with this Paramount hostile takeover of WBD? You know, we talked about it last week. It's something that we've been talking about for a long time, so I want to continue the discussion on it. Last week, we thought Netflix was buying WBD, but Paramount's like not so fast. Looks like they've gone after the shareholders and they've offered a significantly more amount of money for WBD than Netflix is. And now this whole thing is being stalled.
It is being stalled. Here's what's interesting about this is that the Warner people are super quiet on this because they don't want this deal. They do not want to sell to Skydance Paramount. So and Skydance is fully aware of this. That's why they're going directly to the shareholders. That still might not work. We still have this idea that they can just buy up all the shares. Like realistically, if the shareholders believe that it's not in the best interest of the company, like the higher money deal doesn't always win. What you're seeing a lot of is Tim Scott's a useless bag of dicks, but he's out in Congress right now talking about how it's an unfair deal if Netflix curbs Warner, right? And he's not wrong in that regard. No. The problem is it's the same thing. It's the same thing as if Paramount picks it up too. There's no difference, right? One is a bigger streamer. The other is a player in the theater game, and they want the whole thing. Netflix just wants Warner Brothers. That's still Zaslav's plan is to spin off because he knows there's, and I think this is the thing that they're trying. Zaslav knows there is more money in a spinoff than even what the full companies, because now you're talking about two companies value with a higher value. So Zaslav's saying, no, we're going to get.
Go ahead. Yeah, I actually got the numbers here. So Netflix is offering $82.7 billion, mostly cash for WBD, but it excludes the cable stations.
$27 a share.
Yeah, and Paramount has made a higher all-cash bid of $108.4 billion, which includes the cable's TV stations. It's heavily leveraged with $54 billion in debt and funding from foreign sovereign wealth funds, Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, Qatar, and, of course, one Jared Kushner. So if you're wondering who the Trump administration is going to favor, would be Paramount.
Which is this thing is the shareholders, I think, realize this is why they're coming out for it, because they really want CNN. They really want, I think they're overvaluing the value of CNN, because once the Trump fan base owns it in terms of another Fox News, all the people that actually watch CNN are going to stop watching CNN. People are stopped watching CNN anyway. It's just old people anyway. So but that's the thing is, I think that Zaslav, who favors Netflix, is going to try to talk Sharon saying, look, we're going to get more money when we spin this thing off. These are going to be two separate companies, and we're going to get more than, which is why Paramount Skydance is pushing so hard for this. The problem is now the administration saying that this might be, they might just poo-poo the deal altogether, which they could also poo-poo the deal if Hollywood doesn't want either, right? The people in the industry don't want either of these companies taking over Warner. They want Warner to remain independent. And that's still possible that happens. It's possible that this whole thing gets stalled too much and these deals die. It wouldn't be the first time. We all thought that Sinclair and Tribune Company was going to happen, and it faltered. So yeah. It's not crazy to think that nothing happens out of all this. My money is not with that. But the fact that Warner's, it's going to be on Zaslav to convince the shareholders that the Skydance deal is not right for them. And the fact that no one has said anything since, and there's a right of refusal coming up first week of January, the fact that nothing has been said since leads me to believe that the Ellisons are still going to get fucked out of this thing in the long run. But that being said, I don't know. This is like a lot of the top people, you read a lot of the big names in the industry, the film industry, they're like, I don't know what's going to happen. And you read a lot of the people on the Washington side, and they're like, I don't know what's going to happen. The problem is the economy's in the shitter. And a lot of the right is super unpopular right now with independents. There's like a lot of stuff going on, and they might have a lot more important shit to worry about in 2026 than major media deals. So it's super questionable to see where this thing winds up. My money still goes with Netflix. I do think that's kind of winds up happening, mainly because I think Zaslav is going to try to sell the shareholders in Vegas. There's more money for us to be made after the spinoff. And Paramount doesn't want the spinoff. They want the whole thing.
All right, JD, we're going to close on this, and it's kind of a downer. I sent you this. I texted you before the show that we might have some bad news, and we do have some bad news. I'm sad to report that Rob Reiner, he played Meathead on All in the Family. He was the director of The Princess Bride, of course, Spinal Tap, the latest Spinal Tap, the sequel that had just come out. He actually had a really great podcast going over the JFK assassination, where he actually names who killed him.
Really?
I don't think he could hold up in court, but yeah, he did. Him and Soledad O'Brien did a whole series, like a 10-part series. But
no shit, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, it's really good. He's very convincing. He's a great, obviously, he's a great storyteller. One of the greatest storytellers that we've ever had. But yeah, man, super sad. Rob Reiner dead in his home. Says legendary actor, director and actor who rose to prominence, All in the Family, and went on to direct classics, Spinal Tap, Stand By Me, of course. Yep. Princess Bride, was found dead in his home alongside his wife. So more information is coming out. But, his dad just recently died within the last couple of years. But it's a crazy story. It looks like, hold on, I think it was in the chat, Transferring Heat said Rob Reiner's found out an apparent homicide. Crazy story. Yeah, it's just breaking. Fuck. It's crazy. I love Rob Reiner. He's fantastic.
Me too. Stand By Me is one of those movies that I watched as a little kid on HBO that just, it touched me in a lot of ways. Just like, it's such a template for a lot of what the stuff that I enjoy writing, and it's, Stephen King story. So of course I love that, but just, he was such an amazing filmmaker. Like The Princess Bride is my wife and I's movie. That's our thing. And
I love that movie.
such a good film. He was so talented and so funny. And imagine living this much life and to get it taken from you violently. It's a shame.
And you know, dude, I was on HBO Max just, I think it was yesterday, and I saw that the new Spinal Tap movie was out on HBO Max. I was like, oh, you know what? It's time. I need to give this a real shot. I did not want to watch it because I'm like, who does a sequel 40 years after the fact and it's still good? Well, you know, there was a new Beverly Hills Cop recently that turned out was really good. Okay, so I'm like, maybe I will give Spinal Tap 2 a shot. I have not yet, but I'm going to, now I have to, because we just lost one of the, you know, the great storytellers of our time, Rob Reiner. So, man, I hate to end that on a sour note like that, but it did just come through, and I was like, well, JD has to talk about it.
And I just, this is going to take me some time to process this, actually. Like, it's one of the great, I mean, like, he's one of the great baby boomer filmmakers, right? He's up there with like Ron Howard and Steven Spielberg as far as like having just a cultural impact. And one of, you know, just from a generation of pro TV actors who was able to successfully transition into filmmaking, the man's he's Carl Reiner's kid. Like, you're talking about Hollywood royalty. Like, fuck, man, this is it's a shame, dude. It's like, you sent me that text just before the show. And then Jeremy texted me the same thing just before the show. I'm like, I can't think about this right now. Like, I gotta focus on bitching about WWE. I gotta be funny. Like, I just, God damn, man. I can't get over the fact, like, there's something that's so tragic about living long. Like, this man was damn near 80 years old, and like, homicide. Like, it just goes to show you, man, that tomorrow is promised to no one. And like, live that life, and like, it wasn't like your body said it's your time. I don't know the story, so I imagine as the days go on, we'll know more.
We'll find out more. And I keep thinking of how the way Gene Hackman went out, you know, we're like, it took a few days before we got any like real details. So
right,
and this sounds weird to speculate on what happened right now.
This sounds worse. Like, this sounds like probably a robbery or something like that. I imagine we'll learn more.
Robbery is like homicide.
Yeah. I hate to speculate, but I mean, just,
You know, but before we go, I'm just going to Google this really quick. Rob Reiner, JFK podcast. Everybody should go check it out. It's called Who Killed JFK. He names the people who did it. So now again, like, I don't think it could hold up in court, but here it is. Who Killed JFK, the podcast. Good stuff. Him and Soledad O'Brien, she hosts it. They go really in depth on the whole controversy, which is obviously right down my alley. Rob Reiner was the last guy in the world I thought would be a JFK kind of conspiracy theorist. Like, if it was an Oliver Stone one, I was like, okay, it makes sense. Reiner, fucking meathead. I was like, I didn't think that it would be him, but it was him. And he did a great job with it. And he talks all the way through it and gives like all the details and all the different conspiracies and hits him at every angle. And then kind of like at the end, it's like, here's who I think did it.
Wow. I have to listen to this now. You've given me some homework for the week.
Yeah,
man, this is a fucking shame. I'm gonna sit my kid down this week and we're going to watch Stand By Me together.
Yeah, for real. I love Stand By Me. I love the original Spinal Tap. Mm-hmm. Loved obviously the Princess Bride. And he did a TV show on HBO called The Plumbers with Woody Harrelson. It's about the Watergate scandal. It's really good.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Now I got to Google that. Hold on. HBO Watergate Woody Harrelson. So Woody Harrelson plays a E. Howard Hunt, who was one of the plumbers that was hired. Yeah, it's called White House Plumbers. He plays E. Howard Hunt, the former CIA agent who was working with G. Gordon Liddy, the FBI agent, to concoct this whole deal to stop the leaks from happening within the organization. And then they go apeshit. They go haywire and they concoct this whole plan to break in the DNC. And then and that's how Nixon, like, you know, Nixon didn't really know anything about that plan, mm-hmm. but he tried to cover it up, and that's what got him, you know, jammed up. But it's a really, really good one.
That's so, like, it's so quaint. Like, it was a break into a shitty break into a hotel looking for some fucking files. Like, that's so, like,
yeah,
lame in comparison to all this shit we've experienced over the last couple decades. It's just,
well, that's why that's okay. Richard Nixon's a piece of shit, right? We can all agree.
Yeah, we can all
agree. He was an asshole, right? But at the time, he was one of our most popular presidents ever. Like, as far as, like, he won his reelection in a fucking landslide. And well, the former
top contender was murdered. Like,
yes, yes. But so he's one of the most popular presidents we ever have at that point. He wins in a landslide. After he wins his reelection, his vice president, all of a sudden, he gets jammed up on some charges. He's out. So the guy that they replace him with is Gerald Ford, who was on the fucking Warren Commission, right?
Guy.
Mm-hmm. Warren Commission. And then E. Howard Hunt and G. Gordon Liddy are on this team. Right, E. Howard Hunt is a guy that people thought killed JFK. so he's on this team. They do all these crazy things. They, you know, they send some Cuban guys who were part of the Bay of Pigs invasion, right? Like into the DNC. And then who is the one that snitched out? Who's the one that snitched out Nixon? The Mark former Felt. Fucking assistant director of the FBI. That's the mm-hmm. guy that, like, and he gives the information to a former Army intelligence officer who literally just left the Army and all of a sudden landed this big gig with the Washington Post, never a journalist before. You guys want to talk about a fucking conspiracy? I think Nixon's got a case.
It's crazy. Like, when you really dig into Watergate, it's such a stupid conspiracy too, but you're yeah. right. I mean, and you look back on it, you're like, those books were cooked, man, for sure. Yeah. Like, it's a wild story. And then, cause Ford's the only man who was never elected president.
Yes. Yeah. And he did them, like, the deep state a solid by uh-huh. doing the Warren Commission when he didn't want to do it. He went in there, uh-huh. they rigged the whole thing with fucking Alan Dulles, right? The guy that JFK fired as a CIA director is uh-huh. heading the Warren Commission. They bring in Gerald Ford, and then they essentially do a soft coup. They get rid of Nixon. They get rid of his vice president, and then they put in Gerald Ford, who is like an implant. So I'm just saying,
dude,
it's something to look into.
Ford was not elected as a vice president or a president, was the yeah. president. Like, it's hard not to look at the whole thing, how Watergate shakes down in relation to the Warren. Mike's the conspiracy guy. I'm not yeah. the conspiracy guy. It is impossible to not look at the ascendancy of Gerald Ford and Watergate and be like, what the fuck? Like, it's crazy, because the Watergate scandal was really nothing, like, in the grand scheme of things. You're stealing DNC secrets, who gives yeah. a fuck? Like, it's so we're talking about, like, coming out of the 60s, you're talking about the Bay of Pigs, Vietnam, like, all kinds of, like, the Kennedy assassination,
the
real shit. Yeah, the Gulf of Tonkin. You're talking about real stuff, and Nixon has to leave in shame because he tried to cover up a fucking break into a cheap shit hotel to steal some fucking papers that yeah. meant nothing. It's so wild. Like, it's yeah. one of the dumbest. And I laugh because you look back at all the crazy shit that every single president since Nixon, and I'm not a Nixon guy, don't get me wrong, but everyone since him has gone through, and you're like, that's what got rid of Nixon? It's yeah. like, when you really read about it, it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, absolutely insane. And leave everybody on this. When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, what a great movie. The best romantic comedy. Every romantic yeah. comedy since then has been aping When Harry Met Sally. And it's yes. far better than them.
Yeah. If you think, like, my wife and I watched that on Valentine's Day years ago, and she had never seen the movie. And I was like, no, you have to watch this. It's the greatest, romantic comedy of all time. And afterwards she was like, yeah, that's the greatest one that I think I've ever seen. It's fantastic. All right, guys, we're going to get off here. That's going to do it for us this week. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rain from
That was fun.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.